Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, What's New in OmegaMon XE for Kicks on ZOS V4.20. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and include a question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how IBM OmegaMon XE for Kicks can be used to alert you to potential problems and to find and solve real issues in your Kick systems or applications. The speaker for today's teleconference is Richard Burford, Senior Developer, OmegaMon XE for Kicks Development. At this time, I would like to hand the conference over to Mr. Richard Burford. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, April. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, and thanks for joining the meeting. As April said, my name is Richard Burford. I'm a developer working on the OmegaMon XE for Kicks suite of programs, which means I wrote some of the code that we're going to talk about. And if we turn to slide 2, it says, please feel free to ask questions. So if I say anything that doesn't make sense, interrupt me, ask questions. If I don't know the answer, I'll either make something up or take it down and get you an answer from the people who do know. So on slide 3, this is the contents of this presentation. First of all, there's a brief summary of what was in OmegaMon XE for Kicks version 4.10. And the reason for that is from talking to customers, a lot of people didn't make the move up to 4.10. So just a quick summary of what's in 4.10. And then a look at what's in 4.20, which includes, as it says, combined FMIDs, session switching with no logon, initialization in Kicks, there's a new way of doing that. Another initialization change where we simplified some of the task start code to make that a little more efficient. Application trace facility. There are significant changes in application trace, including, as it says, real-time option for application trace. You can start it and stop it using resource limiting. We display the natural program name in the 3270 version and the TEP ATF display. And the TCB name is available in the TEP, and we'll see examples of that. We've changed service task analysis. That's been enhanced to include statistics that relate to service level analysis storage data space, so you can actually see whether you've got an appropriate amount of storage defined for the SLA data space. On slide 4, continued contents of XE for Kicks on version 4.20. And this is Kicks Transaction Server version 4.1 exploitation. So we've got support in the product for application bundles, atom services, user-defined events, JVM servers, XML transforms, and some resource signature data in the 3270 interface. And I've made a note here that in the following slides, some of the new reports have odd-looking names, and that's due to a problem on my laptop and not in anything that you'll see. We've also added a service-level analysis batch interface. There are some changes that I'm not going to cover to BERT reporting and some changes to log trace analysis, and I don't have slides for either of those, but everything else is covered. So on slide 5, what was in version 4.10? We did a lot of work in version 4.10, some of you may not have seen those changes. But basically, it was a significant re-architecting of several areas of the product, which had some quite good performance benefits for many of you. An example is that the glues that we use are only activated when we need to use them. In the past, we just went ahead and activated every exit we could think of. In version 4.10, we look at the options that you've selected for OmegaMon to monitor and then activate the glues that we need. So we're not activating things that you wouldn't need. An obvious benefit of that is something like XRMI out, the global user exit there. In the past, we would have activated that, and if you're a DB2 site, you would have seen that exit invoked after every DB2 request, every SQL request. Now, if we don't need data that's collected at that point, we don't activate XRMI out. So you'll save CPU immediately by not having that active exit in place. There was an awful lot of work rewriting the way that we handle SMS data. A Megamon XE for Kix will write out SMS records for databases that we monitor. One change in that area was we've renumbered those SMS records from 255s to 112s, 112 being an IBM SMS record. We've changed the way that they're actually written. In the past, they used to be written every time a task completed that had access to monitored database. So if you had a transaction that accessed, for example, Adabas and VSAM, then we would, at the end of that task, write two SMS records. There'd be two physical SMS writes. What we've done in 4.10 is we now buffer those records. We build a couple of buffers in storage, 32K, that being the largest size SMS we'll deal with, and we fill those buffers. Once the buffers are full, we'll write them out. And the net effect of that is actually, instead of doing an SMS write for every transaction that completes, if we take VSAM as an example, we'll do an SMS write for every 108 or 110 transactions that completes. So that's a significant reduction in the overhead associated with writing SMS records if you're using the Megamon database SMS records. You can also optionally compress those records in the same way that Kix does, and you'll get a compression ratio of about 50% for our records. So that's all easily controlled in the product in the global data area. A big change, another big change that was in that whole, in that area of SMF and the monitoring control table was, in the past, for a Megamon to work properly, what you had to do was start to define a set of monitoring control table entries, OMIG Basic and OMIG DB2 and OMIG DLI and their associated friends. If you defined all of them, you were adding about 500 bytes of data to every 110 record that you wrote. What we did was append that data to the record and then look at it as the record, as Kix finished the transaction and wrote a SMS record. We would copy the data back out of the SMS record and send it over to our online task history and service level analysis and response time analysis and what have you. In 4.10, we rewrote the way we handle all of that. What we do now is get maintenance storage. We put the statistics we want in storage. When the task completes, we go and find that chunk of storage. We copy the statistics out of there. There's no involvement required in the monitoring control table anymore. The benefit of that is we've simplified the code in our XML text it. I think we removed several hundred instructions from that. We removed a whole bunch of monitor calls in our task-related user exit that runs at the end of task. So that's reduced the number of calls to Kix in some cases by up to 25-30 calls. So the MCT and SMS changes are fairly significant. So if you haven't installed 4.10, then it's worth doing, I think, just from a performance perspective, because you'll get the benefit of all of those changes. When you install 4.10, or if you go straight to 4.20, one of the things to look at to take advantage of all of these changes is take a look at your monitoring control table, because you don't need the Megamon entries anymore unless you're reporting on that data using your own tools. If you use SAS or MXG or any of those tools, then obviously you need the data in the 110 record. But if you're not reporting on data that Megamon collects, there's no good reason to have those entries in the MCT anymore. And that will save you some overhead, which is, as far as I'm concerned, always a good thing. We spent quite a lot of time working with other teams within Kix. Kix Performance Analyzer now supports the Megamon database SMF records. So on the Kix Performance Analyzer panels, you'll see an option to process the 112 records, and it will produce reports based on what we've written out. We had a customer request to integrate with the debug tool. What was happening there was we had a customer who was running tasks under debug tool with our resource limiting turned on for elapsed time. And they'd get halfway through their debugging session and OmegaMon would append the task, which wasn't terribly helpful for their debugging efforts. So we gave the debug tool people an API that allows them to dynamically turn off resource limiting for a task that's running under debug tool. So we try to work with other teams where practical. Interim feature 4 I mentioned, that's included in the base 420 build, and that has a couple of useful features. The first of which is dynamic workspace linking to 3270. A dynamic workspace linking in the TEP is the ability to launch in context to another screen space. And in TEP terms, an example would be to link from transaction analysis from the details of a task, maybe into the DB2 product to the DB2 thread details, and it's seamless, and you know the two products tell each other that they're there, and they have a common piece of data that allows that link to occur. What we did in this fourth fix pack was implemented the ability to dynamically link to a 3270 application, and we provided, I think, 10 or 12 samples. So you can link, for example, from the TEP online data viewing task history view directly to the 3270 ONDV task view for that task. So all of the detail that you want may not be in the TEP, but you can get to it very, very quickly with this DWL for 3270. And it supports some log-on persistence, so you don't have to log on in a session every time you go to the same Kix region or the same common interface. So that's there. And we added in the TEP the some online data viewing task history, and we'll see a screenshot of that later. So that's pretty much what was in 410. And now we're going to get on slide 6 into 420. So the first thing is combined FMIDs, and in previous releases, we've had you install OmegaMon XE for Kix on ZOS and OmegaMon XE for Kix CTG on ZOS as two separate products. In 420, the FMIDs were combined, and during the installation process, you'll be asked whether you want to install or which product you want to install. But basically, as part of the install package now, you'll get OmegaMon XE for Kix transaction gateway on ZOS available to you to install. The second thing on slide 6 is session switching with no relog on. And this is a big request from a large number of customers. And what it does is if you're in a menu system session, aka the classic, and you go to the Kix command and look at your list of Kix regions that you're monitoring and decide you don't really want to be on Kix A, you want to be on Kix B, and issue a PS11 to switch, if your security credentials remain the same and are still valid, then we'll switch you to the new Kix region with no intervening logon screen. So in the past, and prior to this being available, what would happen is you'd select the switch and you'd be presented with a logon screen. And people got frustrated by the fact that, you know, their logon was the same, but they were still being asked to re-log on. Now that's not the case. We'll check, as far as we can, your security credentials. And if they, as I said, remain valid, or if they are valid, then we'll log you on to the new Kix region, so you won't see that intervening logon screen. So that's a kind of usability enhancement. On slide 7, this was another customer requirement. There is a requirement in the product for the common interface address space to be started before Kix invokes OmegaMon code in the PLT or via command. And If the common in space isn't available and you enter Omega in it, then it'll just come up with a message saying the common in space isn't available. There's a method of getting around that called an OCCI REC DB card. And what that does is if you code OCCI REC in the Kix JCL and Omegamon starts, but the common interface isn't available, the Omegamon code will check for the OCCI REC card and then wait on a write to operator with reply saying something along the lines of, Omegamon's not available, what do you want to do? Which is great, except obviously it delays the start of the Kix address space, which is not something you want. So over the years, customers have written various automation solutions to make sure that Kix starts after the Omegamon common interface. And that's fine, that works. But it's one more piece of code that you guys have to maintain. And as a result of a customer request, what we've done is added a retry parameter into the Omegamon code. And this is implemented via Kix initpalm data, and I'll show you an example of that. And it has a retry value and a count. And the format, as it says, is retry, open bracket, hours, hours, minute, minute, seconds, seconds, comma, count. And the hour, hour, minute, minute, etc. is in the same format as an interval command on a Kix exec command. And the count is optional. If you omit the count, then it will keep trying forever. If you've got a Kix region that's trying to connect to Omegamon, you can log on to Kix and issue the new omeg cancel command, and it will stop the retry processing. It won't flood your console with messages, because what we do is issue the first couple of messages as Omegamon tries to start, detect that the retry parameter has been coded, start the retry processing, and then we don't issue any further messages until either the retry attempt is successful or we run out of count attempts to try. So if you say, you know, interval 1, and the count is 10, then once we reach 10 attempts to log on to the common interface, we'll issue a message that says we can't do it. Bye. So we're not going to flood your message, your console with messages. Slide 8 is some initpalm data from one of my Kix regions. Hopefully you can read that. But the initpalm data specifies a retry interval and count in the form retry, hours, hours, etc., and a number. As I said, the number is optional. And on slide 9, here we can see Omegamon trying to attempting to connect to the common interface. Obviously, the common interface isn't there. The specified parameter, and we'll tell you what parameter we're going to use, indicates that the connection will be retried every 30 seconds. And as I've said again, retry attempts can be cancelled using the new omeg cancel option. So you can see there we've come up, detected that the common interface isn't available, and we'll start retry processing. On slide 10, the more performance enhancements. I kind of alluded to the fact that Omegamon Kix runs various trues and glues, and one of the things we do is run a start a task true. What we used to do was we had a work area defined, and Kix would give us that work area as part of start task true processing, and then we would immediately get main some storage to use. So in this change, one of the things we've done is combined and rationalized that storage so that Kix hands us all of the storage a task will ever need. The reason for that is it saves a get main during start task of every task that you monitor using Omegamon. And that's a small change, but if you think about it over the day in a region where you're running millions and millions of transactions, you're saving millions and millions of get mains, and that all adds up. So that's a slight reduction in CPU. The other change that we made was for resource limiting processing. If you use resource limiting, there was some logic at the start of task that built the thresholds that would be used for that particular task. And we simplified that logic. It was very, very safe and very, very complicated. And the more we looked at it, the more we realized that it was unnecessarily complicated. So for tasks that are monitored or managed using resource limiting, that simplification resulted in a change that actually can be monitored. So the CPU attributable to a Megamon in a Kix address space where you've got resource limiting running drops by as much as a couple of percent, which, again, that may not sound very much, but I'm a firm believer in everything we can do to help reduce your costs is a good thing. So slide 11. Application trace facility enhancements. I mentioned that in interim feature 4, which was released earlier this year, actually I can't remember when it was released, 2009, we made application trace available in the TEP. So there's now a TEP report of application trace facility. And in version 4.20, we've extended changes in application trace. So one of the things we did, and this was a customer request, in fact, most of these things are customer requests, we've added the natural program name into the application trace facility. Natural is one of those 4GLs that Kix doesn't really know very much about. It sees that it's executing code in the natural nucleus, and every natural transaction displays as displays the current Kix program as the nucleus name. We have a feature in a Megamon called Umbrella Services, which allows you to change the program name, the display transaction ID. So if you have a menu system with one transaction ID but running hundreds of functions, you can use Umbrella Services to split that menu system up and display something more meaningful in our panels. So what we had always done was provide code that takes the natural program name and puts that in our displays. This change moves the natural program name into the application trace displays. So if you look at an application trace for a natural application, you'll see the program name changing to what natural thinks is going on. In version 4.20, we've also added a change such that if you have a task that exceeds a resource limiting threshold, you can have that dynamically turn on application trace. So if you set up a transaction with a threshold and say, tell me when it uses more than 100 VSAM calls, as well as getting a message on the console, it can dynamically turn on application trace. And we've also changed application trace so that if the application trace is active for a transaction, you can go in while that transaction is still executing and look at the application trace. So application trace is now dynamic. And in fact, if you're looking at the task display, you can go into an individual task and say, okay, something's going on here. It's still running, but we don't know what it's doing. Let's turn on application trace. And then you can go and look at the output from that application trace while the task is still executing. In previous releases, you had to wait till the task was finished before you could view the application trace output. So application trace has become a far more dynamic entity than was previously the case. So, on slide 12, this is the TEP. Hopefully most of you have seen it, the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. You can see in the pop-up dialog, it says application trace. And if we select application trace, then on slide 13, we go down to the application trace for that little transaction. And what I've done with this example is, I mentioned earlier, we've now added the TCB on which a request was executed into the display. And I've just statused that TCB column and said if it's green, it's on the QRTCB. If it's not green, if it's orange or red or whatever that horrible color is, it was on an open TCB. And the reason I did that was just because I could. But if you're still working on making applications thread safe, this gives your applications programmers, or that gives anybody, a very quick way of determining the thread safe implications of the code that they're running. So you can see that this did one switch to an L8 TCB and then came back. So on slide 14, this is a task display. This is the menu system, the classic interface, and this is a display of all of the tasks that are running in the system at the moment. And I'm going to select on slide 15 one of them, which is my LN20, which is a VSAM application. And you can see at the bottom of the block of white text, it says application trace and the state is active. So that indicates that application trace is currently in process for this LN20 transaction. Excuse me. If we go to slide 16, something else we're going to look at the program definition again in the menu system. And you can see at the bottom of this screen, we've added support for resource signature data for some of the objects in this KIX address space. So this is a transaction server version 4.1 region. And what we've done is gone and fished out the resource signature data for this program. So you can see where the program was installed from, which CSD group, when it was changed, who changed it, how they changed it. So that's an addition in version 4.20, is support for resource signature data for some of the objects. And we'll increase the objects that we support with this as we have time to get to them. On slide 17, again, you can see that application trace is active for this particular transaction. This is in the task display. And this is application trace. So this task is actually still running, and we can go in and look at the application trace. And obviously that would increase as the task does more and we refresh our view. I mentioned earlier that you can turn on application trace dynamically for a task that exceeds its resource limiting threshold. And that's true. One of the other main areas that we added support for in version 4.20 was transaction server version 4.1. And the next few slides are just screen displays of support for various of the new features. So on slide 19, we've got support for Atom services. So if you have Atom services defined, we'll display those. All of these new features that we're supporting in the TEP use the same model of a summary view followed by a detailed view. So what we've done is provided the first screen is normally going to be a summary view. So for Atom services, it might say you have 67 Atom services installed, and here they are, and here's the most important information about those Atom services. And then if any of them are really interesting, or if any of them have raised an alert, say, you know, I'm not enabled or it's not defined the way you would expect, then you can select the little blue link object at the end of the row and link down to get more detail about the object that you're looking at. We did that a while back in the TEP, and in fact it's the model that we've used for years in the common interface, where we'll start at a higher level and give you a summary of what's happening and then link down for more detail. So on slide 20, you can see that we've linked down for more detail of this Atom service, and that's when we start to pull back the 256 character names for the bundles and the configuration file and things like that. So that's Atom service details. On slide 21, XML transforms, and again, the same idea, we'll provide you with a list of the XML transform processes, and then you can link down for detail to any of those. On slide 22, event processing. On this panel, you can see there's two separate reports, which is event processing status, which is simply whether event processing is on or off in this transaction server version 4.1 region. And then we'll list the separate event processes that you've got installed and what their status is. So in this region, obviously, I've only got one process called latest test binding, and it's enabled. If I select that on slide 23, there's a bit more information about what that capture point is. So we can see that it's latest capture specification, that it's executed after every write QTS, and it's called this is the latest test, and we've captured 40 events. So this was a little event capture point that I added into Kix that looks for certain information in a temporary storage queue and writes out the results of those that processing to another temporary storage queue. On slide 24, you can see in the menu system, it's not immediately clear, but about two-thirds of the way down this screen, there's a count of the captured events, and you can see filter operation count, captured event count, and signal event count. Signal events being a manual means or an API means of issuing an event, as opposed to the things that I was testing here, which are all automatically done by Kix. So the support for the event processing is also available in this 3270 display at the task level, both in real time and in history. On 25, we added support for JVM servers. And I was asked by Hursley why we'd done that, since they're not utilizing them yet. But when they sent us the release or the build of Kix that had JVM servers in it, they didn't tell us that they weren't going to do very much with them just yet. So this may be a bit premature, but if you want it, then there's support for Kix transaction, JVM servers in the product at the moment. We've added links because the JVM profile is a program defined to Kix, so there's a link to that program if you want it, so you can see where that was. The runtime options are a program. You can see where they were loaded and what they look like. There's also a link to the new thread TCBs that these things use. There are a pool of T8 and T9 TCBs that are associated with JVM servers. So we've added where it made sense to us dynamic workspace links to other reports. And you can see on slide 26 the DWL to thread TCBs. And what we've done here is rather than just link to a TCB report and show you a whole pool of L8s and L9s and X8s and X9s and all those good things, we've filtered it so you see the TCBs that are of interest in a JVM server environment. And obviously, we provide these DWL targets because we think there'll be a value. You can add your own if we've missed something or if there's something you think is important. On slide 27, application bundles. So again, this is an overview. I have three bundles installed. They're all enabled, not doing very much with them. But if I select any one of them, I can go down to slide 28 and get the resource bundle details and the resource bundle parts that were installed from that resource bundle. So again, it's that whole idea of having an overview, a summary, and then linking down to details as appropriate. On slide 29, this is the service task analysis report. And initially, I added this report for my own use because I wanted to see what the agent thought of Omegamon, whether Omegamon was started in a Kix address space, and we issue a command and see what the results of that command. And over the years, it's become more useful because now we've added support for dynamic workspace linking to 3270 parameters. So if you're going to start making use of dynamic workspace linking to 3270, you can display the parameters that are used in this report. So you can see here it's got the name of the common interface that it'll connect to. It has the global name that was loaded. It'll have the Apple ID of the common interface that it's going to talk to. But the three or four new fields that were added here are the end ones, the WM blocks, the WM transaction data current percent, peak percent. These all relate to to the service level analysis data space. Service level analysis, if you've never looked at it, is a very, very useful feature of the TEP, of the XC portion. And what it does, essentially, is as every transaction in Kix completes and runs through our XML out code, we take a copy of bits of the performance record and send it over to our agent code. It's written into a data space, summarized, and we produce reports that have summaries of the performance of every transaction that executed in your Kix address space. You can classify those records using either Workload Manager service classes. So if you're running your Kix under Workload Manager, you can view the reports and say, okay, in this workload, in this service class, these 500 transactions completed and the average response was. Or Omegamon Kix has a feature where we'll allow you to define Omegamon WLM-like service classes. They're purely for reporting, but you could set up service classes such that all of your payroll transactions went into a service class called payroll, and then you would see those payroll transactions by Kix region, by transaction ID, and by service class. So you'd have a view that said, for payroll, I ran 9,000 transactions, and the average response time was 0.002, and my goal was 0.003. So everything's good. And then you could zoom from that 9,000 view down and say, okay, 4,000 of them ran in Kix Fred, 5,000 ran in Kix Bert, so that's where I expect things to be going, and these are the transactions that make up that service class. So if you've never looked at service class analysis, service level analysis, it's well worth taking a look at. But these extra columns of data relate to the data space that we use for capturing the performance records and summarizing them and producing the data in those reports. And the reason for putting them there is if you run with the defaults and have a very high transaction rate, you may well find that the data space can't cope with the volume of data that's being written into it, and you start to lose data in your service level analysis reports. So this is a place where you could set up a situation and say, if 100% of my data space is in use, I need to know about it. If 80%, whatever. You know, it's a tuning opportunity to make sure that you don't lose important performance data. On slide 30, which is pretty much the last slide, we have customers who use service level analysis, and we have one particular customer who has 20,000 plus service class definitions. So in their enterprise, they have over 20,000 definitions of service classes and the transactions that are categorized into those service classes. And they kept running into problems because they'd set up goals for service classes, and then as they ran through a workload, they'd realize their goals were wrong and they wanted to change them. Which, if you've only got 10 service classes, may be manageable. You know, you can go into the GUI and say, okay, pull up my service classes, change the goal from 1 to 2 or whatever the change is, save it, good, everything's fine. If you've got 20,000 service classes or 20,000 plus, you can imagine that you don't want somebody sitting for however long it would take at a GUI making 20,000 service classes. Even if it's only 1,000, it would not be very much fun. So what we did in 4.20 was we've implemented a service level analysis batch interface. And what this does is it's a little command-driven process that will extract your rules and write them out into a file. And the file is very, very XML-like. It's all documented. We provide the documentation on what the various parameters are. So you get a flat file with some XML-like structures. You can go in and make the change or the changes, and then you can run the ESLA batch interface again and say, okay, upload these, and there you are. Your changes are all made, and then you just have to tell service level analysis, by the way, I've made some changes. Pick up my new rules, please. So you can make your 20,000 changes in a matter of minutes as opposed to a matter of however long it would take to change 20,000 rules online. So that's it for, I think that's it. Yep, that's it for version 4.20. On slide 31, it just says questions. So, April, if you could open this up for questions in the survey, I would be very grateful.
Thank you, Richard. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a question and answer session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key, followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all the options before making your selection. Question 1. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. Question 2, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Question 3, do you plan to install Kix TSV4 in the near future? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Question 4. Will you plan to install OmegaMon Kix version 4.20 to take advantage of the new features? If yes, press star 1. If no, but will install in 6 months, press star 2. If no, we won't install it within the next 12 months, press star 3. Question 5. Which OmegaMon feature will help you most to manage Kix performance? If it's the real-time Kix system overview and alerts, press star 1. If it's the Kix application trace feature, press star 2. If it's the ability to manage Kix transactions gateway, press star 3. If it's all of the above, press star 4. Question 6. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to our speaker while we wait for questions. And we'll take a question from James Belva of IBM.
Hi, Richard. I had a question on the retry option that you had there at the beginning of the presentation. I'm not a CICF systems programmer, but do install OmegaMon Kix. And when you invoke this retry option, is that an entry in the Kix tables, or is that something you specify in the ICAP panels? And gets populated into the init parm data? I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on how.
Now, you need to go in and manually edit your Kix startup parameters. Okay. And in the Kix overrides, you can provide initPalm data, and the format is something along the lines of initPalm equals program name, comma, parameter name. There's an example in that presentation, and it's documented in the 420 install guide.
Okay.
But it's a parameter that Kix actually has in its startup, and there's a Kix API call that we use, which is something like extract initPalm. And for that given program, we can select any parameters that you pass to us. So it's a minor one-time change, unless you choose to keep changing the value, a minor one-time change to the startup of Kix.
Okay, and do you need the OCCI rec DD statement in order
to
have
it? No, I should have said, actually, I forgot to say, this retry processing will supersede any OCCI rec definition. So if you had JCL that had OCCI rec in, and then you added the initPalm retry data, the initPalm retry would take priority over the OCCI rec.
Okay. And regarding the globals, I've always used the ICAT help in order to keep up with the how they're documented. Is that still one of a resource, or is there also others to keep up with what's the latest part?
We've tried in this release to actually do a better job of updating some of the manuals. So things like this are in the manuals. We're still working on that. But any new global parameters, for instance, the ability to dynamically turn on resource limiting if you exceed an RLIM threshold, anything like that, as part of the code review, we check that it's going to make it into the documentation, the online helps for the global. So, yes, that's all in there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You are welcome.
As a reminder, that's star one if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment. We'll pause for a moment. Once again, star one to ask a question. Richard, it appears there are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing comments.
I would just like to say thank you all very much for attending. Thanks for your time. Thank you for your help, April. And if there are no further questions, you can have 10 minutes of your day back. So thanks again, guys and ladies and whoever else.
That does conclude today's teleconference. Thank you all for your participation.